We're holding on page 22 in Shabbos, the second paragraph. So end of Ois Tesvav. The Mishnah had said, talking about the various kinds of oils and fuels and wicks that you are and aren't allowed to use for Shabbos candles. So the Mishnah had mentioned a whole list of ones that you can't use because they don't burn so well, and if we might tilt the candle, et cetera, et cetera. So the Mishnah had said, Reb Tarfon Omer Ein Madlikin El B'Shemen Zayis Bilvad. Reb Tarfon had said the only thing you can use for Shabbos candles is olive oil, because olive oil burns very cleanly. The Gemara mentions earlier that point. However, the Braisa says, Omer Reb Yechim and Nuri Al Raglov, when Reb Tarfon said that, Reb Yechim and Nuri got up on his feet. But Omer, and he said, you can't say that. Ma Yasu Anshe Bavel She'en Lahem El Shemen Shumshim. And what are the people of Bavel supposed to do where the only kind of oil they have available is sesame oil? Umayasu, in fact, earlier in the parak, it mentions that Abaya tells about Rabba, that Rabba used to light with sesame oil because it lasts longer. And then we do find in various places that Rabba was poor, but then once he found out that Shemen Zayis makes a cleaner, burns more cleanly, and makes a nicer flame, then he started using that instead. But most people in Bavel can't afford that. And Rabbi Yechim Manuri continues, Umahiyasu Anshe Modai, what are people in Modai, which is a media nowadays, part of Iran, what are they supposed to do? Shein Lahem Ela Shemen Hagozim, the only kind of oil they have available is nut oil, walnut oil. Umahiyasu Anshe Alexandria, Shein Lahem Ela Shemen Tznonis, what about the people of Alexandria? All they have is oil from radishes. Umayasu Anshe Kaputkia, and what are the people of Kaputkia supposed to do? Kaputkia is an area in what's nowadays Turkey. They have none of the above. All they have is neft, which is like turpentine or kerosene or petroleum or something like that. So Rabbi Yechim and Nuri says to Rabbi Tarfon, nothing doing. The only things you can't use are the ones that the Chachamim mentioned in the Mishnah that you can't use. Don't think you have to dafka use olive oil. And Abona makes a point about the reason why this is brought in Ein Yaakov. A person should try to do the mitzvah in the best possible way. But if it's not available, then make do with something else. You're accomplishing what the Chachamim told you to do, and Hashem will accept it. So therefore, that's why Rabbi Yechim and Nuri didn't just say, he gets up on his feet in order to forcefully argue against Rabbi Tarfon that the way you're saying, you're going to have many people who are not going to be Mekayim, the Takana of the Chachamim at all, and you can't do that. Okay. Later on in the Perek, the Mishnah talks about a general rule as far as wicks for Shabbos candles. The only thing that comes from a tree that you can use for wicks is flax. Flax actually grows in stalks, but the Pasuk calls it Pishtei Ha'etz, calls it flax of the tree, and therefore, in a certain sense, it can be considered a tree. That's the only thing. You can't use, for example, bark of a tree, or you have certain kinds of trees we're going to learn about later in the Gemara that have like a wool-like substance that grows under the bark. You can't use such things for wicks for Shabbos candles. Then, incidentally, the Mishnah mentions another thing is when it comes to products from trees, if any of them are made into fabric, and you make a tent out of them, the tent itself is not going to be makabel tuma if there's a dead body inside it, again, with the exception of flax. And the Gemara goes on to learn from the fact that the Mishkan, the curtains of the Mishkan, the only plant material that you had in them was linen. So anyway, the Gemara ends up talking about, in that connection, a related question: what about animal skins? If you use animal skins to make a roof or to make a covering, are those makabel tumah? And in particular, the question would be, what if they're skins of non-kosher animals? So the Gemara says the basic question boils down to, when we say we had the roof of the Mishkan was made out of three or four layers, depending on the different opinions. You had the layer that was made out of fabric, out of tcheles vagam and selas shoni and so forth. Then you had the layer that was made out of goat hair. Then you had the oris tchoshim. Then you had the oris elam adamim for oris tchoshim, where there's different opinions whether that was one covering or two. Anyway, the question boils down to whether the tachash was a kosher animal or not. So if you say it was a non-kosher animal, then you have a source that the skins of non-kosher animals can be considered an oil, and therefore can be makabel tumah as an oil. If not, then not. So the Gemara goes back and forth on the discussion, points out that after all, things that are used for melechas shemayim, things that are used for purposes of kedusha, have to be from tahor animals. That's why, for example, the skin that tefillin are made from has to specifically be from a kosher species, and so on and so forth. So eventually the Gemara says, "My habi alo the tachash shahoyi b'mei Moshe." What's the bottom line as far as the tachash? Was it a kosher animal or not? Omer of Ila, Omer of Shimon Lakish, Omer Hoyer of Meir. Reb Meir used to say, "Tachash shahoyi b'mei Moshe beri b'fnei atzma hoya." It was a unique kind of creature, meaning it was a species of its own. It's not just like a freak of some other species or something. V'loichriu b'chachamim im min chayahu im min behema. The Chachamim could not decide whether it was a type of chaya or behema, which that would be relevant. If you shecht one, you have to cover the blood. And I know you're allowed to eat the chaylev of it. If it's a chaya, then you have to cover the blood and you're allowed to eat the chaylev. If it's a behema, then you don't have to cover the blood, but you can't eat the chaylev. So they weren't sure. The Keren Achas Hoysel of Mitzchai, it had one horn on its forehead. Well, if he's shun, is Daman Lo the Moshe, it was available to Moshe only for that time, but also men of Mishkan. So he used it to make the covering for the Mishkan, the Nignaz, and then that species was hidden away. Which, by the way, hidden away might mean that it exists someplace in the world, but it was no longer available for people to find. Eitz Yosef points that out. The same way, for example, we say the Arun was hidden away and it's still there someplace under the Beis Mikdash, the same way the Tachash conceivably does exist somewhere in the world. Anyway, the point is, it was available to them only at that time. Marsha brings from a pasuk in Yechezkel where Hashem says to the Jewish people, listing all the good things that he did for them, taking them out of Mitzrayim and providing them in the Midbar. Hashem says, "I gave you shoes of tachash." So the implication is that fine, that when we say Oysa Shah, we don't mean only for building the Mishkan, we mean it was available for the dirt on Midbar. So they were able to make shoes out of its skin as well. But afterwards, it disappeared and you don't find it in later generations. Anyway, the Gemara says, "Midka'omer keren achas hoisla b'mitzchay." Since we're saying that it had one horn on its forehead, shmamina tahor haya, we see from that it was a tahor species, because the Gemara explains elsewhere that only kosher species animal, the only kosher species of animals have horns on their heads. Now you have, for example, a rhinoceros has horns, but that's on its nose. But growing out of its head, only kosher species have horns or antlers or what have you coming out of their head. So therefore, if this creature had one horn growing out of its head, out of its forehead, then that alone means that it was a kosher animal. Also, the Omer Rabbi Yehuda, also we see that Rabbi Yehuda says about a different kosher animal that also had one horn, where we see that it had one horn and it was kosher. So the same way a tachash, which had one horn, is also a kosher animal. And we see that Rabbi Yehuda says, "Shor shehikriv Adam Rishon," the ox that Adam Rishon brought as a korban after the Chetei Tzadas, after he did Shuvah, then, and the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, there was a whole thing over there, the days are getting shorter and it's becoming nightfall, and he thought that this is all a result of the Chetei Tzadas. And then when he realized that, no, Olam Kamin Hagen Noeg, this is the normal way that the world works. There's dark and there's light. There's shorter days and there's longer days. That in gratitude, he brought a korban to Hashem. Keren achas hois lebemitzchoy. And that ox that he brought as a korban had one horn on its forehead. So we see the same way as that had one horn and was a kosher animal, so is the tachash. In fact, Reb Moshe Feinstein makes an interesting point. He says this animal, this ox that Adam brought as a korban, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that was the original ox that was created during Sheshes Mebereshis. That came, actually, the Gemara doesn't mention it here, but it mentions it in other places. It was the original ox that was created during Sheshes Mebereshis. And all the other oxen of future generations are all descended from that one. Or at least many, maybe not all of them, but many of them are. And normal oxen have two horns. So you see, this particular one had one, but it still had its genetics to be able to have two the same way. And they're still considered equally kosher animals the same way. The tachash may have had only one horn, but nevertheless, it's still considered to be of the same basic species as creatures that have two horns, which therefore are kosher animals. Anyway, so they had one horn. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, David HaMelech asks about his tefillah. V'sitav LaHashem mishur per, may my tefillah be better, be more acceptable to Hashem, more than a sure pap. Now the word sure can mean an animal that was newly born. We find shur kesev ayez ki yivoleh, for example. On the other hand, par means an animal that's a couple of years old. So what is a sure par? It means a creature that was just created, but already was as mature as if it was a par several years old. Because we know that all the creatures that were created in Ma'aseh Bereishis were created fully grown. So David is asking, my tefillah should be more acceptable to Hashem than that sure par that Adam Rishon brought as a korban, makrin mafris, which has horns and hooves. So the Gemara asks, Makrin Tarti Mashma. On the contrary, Makrin implies that it has the normal number of horns too. Where are you getting that it had only one? The answer is Amar Nachman Yitzchak Mi Keren. See, the word is written in the pasuk without the yud. Therefore, we can read it as though it said Mi Keren from a horn. So therefore, it means a creature that had only one horn. There are other places in Shas where this point is brought about that this animal had only one horn, and the different Mephoshim talk about, the Rashba talks about, the Marsha talks about in a similar vein, that the idea is the one horn represented the Achdus of Hashem, in particular because the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that when Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, that was tantamount to denying Hashem. Hashem had told them not to, and then the Nachash is telling them, but if you do, you'll become like Hashem, and they listened to him and ate from the Eitz Hadas, so that's tantamount to becoming, and the Gemara actually calls in Sanhedrin, the Gemara calls Adam Amin, that he denied the Achdus of Hashem. So therefore, now when he's doing Shuvah and bring a korban to Hashem, so he davka brought a korban that has one horn symbolizing that he recognizes the Achdus of Hashem. The point is also the forehead is a symbol. The other Mephoshim talk about the forehead is a symbol of chutzpah, and therefore the one horn growing out of the forehead represents that he's going to overcome that chutzpah that caused him to deny Hashem and re-acknowledge that Hashem is one, and then therefore the one horn growing daft out of the forehead. How does that make that kill his brother? That's Cain killed his brother. We're talking about other. Anyway, so the Gemara says, okay, well, once we've established then that the ox that Adam brought as a korban had one horn, and an ox, of course, is a behemoth, not a chaya, then the lifshit min Adam min behemahu. So why can't we prove from that the fact that it has one horn means that it's somehow related to the ox that Adam brought as a korban, and therefore you should say it's a behemoth, just like that one is. So why do they have a suffix whether it's a chaya or a behemoth? And the answer is, kiven de ikka keresh de min chayahu, because on the other hand, you have the keresh, which is, it's a creature that's also mentioned here and there in Shas. It's similar to a tachash in that it, or at least its horn, is very beautifully colored. Anyway, the point is, you have this creature, demin chayahu, that is a type of chayah, v'lesle alachad karna, and that one also only has one horn, ikalemem, min chayahu, so that raises the possibility that maybe, after all, the tachash is more similar to the keresh and is a chayah, so that's why, since the chachamim weren't sure whether it's more similar to an ox or to a keresh, therefore you ended up with a suffix whether it's a chayah or a bain. The Gemara now before we had a piece of Gemara, which was out of order over here in Ein Yaakov, we had a long piece with a drosha from a Tanchum where people would come and ask him, can you put out a candle on Shabbos because of a sick person, because it's going to bother him and it's going to harm his health. And he gave them a long drosha involving Shloim HaMelech and David HaMelech. And eventually at the end, he explained to them, you see from that drosha the value of human life. You see, for example, not even human life. We said over there that even dogs, for example, the Chacham answered a question for them before even answering a question about what to do with David HaMelech's body. And there you didn't need a shinui in the David's body to bring it into a shady area. You do. So anyway, so he explains to them that yes, the value of a yid's life overrides the halachas of Shabbos, and therefore yes, you put out the candle. In that connection, Rav Tanchum had mentioned that there were psukim in Kehelas that seemed to contradict each other. So now the Gemara is going to go on with that topic of psukim that seemed to contradict each other. So Amar Rav Yehuda Breder of Shmuel Bar Shila or Shilas Meshmei the Rab Bikshu Chachamim Lignoi Sefer Kehelas. The Chachamim were thinking to hide away Sefer Kehelas. In other words, that it shouldn't be available to the public; it should only be available to Yechidei Segula. Because there seem to be contradictions between one part and another. Now, earlier in the Masechta, we had something similar about Yechezkel, where it said, the Gemara had said that there was a problem with Sefer Yechezkel, that there were psukim in it that seemed to contradict the Torah. And Hananiah and Chizkiah and Goren spent a huge amount of time and an enormous amount of oil to reconcile all of them. So Marsha explains, in other words, that... Now the Gemara is going to say over here, they found that Sefer Kehelas, the beginning and end of it are Divrei Torah. Now with Yechezkel, it wasn't that. With Yechezkel, the thing was he was a Navi. So everybody knew that what he's saying is nevuah. So the only question is, how do we reconcile what he's saying that it doesn't contradict what the Torah is saying? Because after all, a Navi can't make up new halachas. Here they had a different problem with Kehelas. It's not just that it's contradicting each other. The problem is they're thinking to themselves, to begin with, is Kehelas even, does it even have the kedusha of one of the books of Tanakh? After all, fundamentally, it's the chokhmah of Shlomo. Shlomo was a chacham mikol adam, so he came up with lots of wise ideas and statements, and he wrote Sefer Kehelas, including a lot of that. But does it really have? Is it really on such a level that we should even bother trying to reconcile the contradictions in it? Or should we not? Should we just say, you know what? Let's just hide it away, and only Yechidus Gula, who will not be confused by those contradictions, will have access to it. Ion Yaakov points out, it's not just contradictions, those wouldn't necessarily bother the Chachamim. The problem was, these are contradictions that seem to touch on fundamentals of Emunah. There are things that Shlomo says in Kehelas. The whole Sefer Kehelas is basically Shlomo's research on what is the meaning of life. So in that, there's a lot of things that he says over there that seem to be saying that life is all about having a good time, for example. So a person is likely to read such psukim and come to wrong conclusions about what a person is in this world for. So therefore, the Chachamim were thinking to hide it away. So, why in the end did they not hide it away? Because the beginning and end of it talk about the importance of Torah. So therefore they realized, in other words, that it's more than just Shlomo's Chochmah. He's telling us in this book how to live a life according to Torah. And therefore all the contradictions, you're going to realize now all of those are not really contradictions. You're going to understand. Al-Derech, like when you read a book, you have the preface to the book that tells you what the book is there for, and at the end you have a summary that says what he concluded. And once you have those, then even if you find in the middle of the book, you're going to find things that seem out of place, you're going to realize that those are all part of the thesis that he's developing in the book. So the same way over here, once they saw the beginning and end of Divrei Torah, then they're not bothered, then fine. If there are contradictions, we'll work to understand how to reconcile those contradictions, but we're just not just going to write it off altogether as it's just Shlomo's Chochmah and it's beyond us. So where do we have Tchilosei Divrei Torah? Where's the beginning of, what do you have at the beginning of Kehelas, the Divrei Torah? The Pasuk says, it's the second or third Pasuk over there, My Yisrin Ma'odam B'chol Amole Sheyamol Tachas HaShemesh. What profit does a person have in all of the work and all the labor that he does, Tachas HaShemesh, under the sun? So for Ami Dvei Rav Yana, so they said in the Yeshiva of Rav Yana, you should realize it means Tachas Hashem Oshu De'en Loi. It means the effort that a person puts in things that are under the sun, meaning in the Gashmiistic world. You're right, Ein Loi, he doesn't really have any profit from that. It's all Gashmiist, and there's nothing. There's not much good to it. But Kodim Hashemesh Yesh Loi. But the implication is, if he works on what's above the sun, what's before the sun, meaning the Torah, which was created even before the sun, because the Torah, Alpaim Shana Kodma Torah Loilam, then Yesh Loi, then he has, then there is profit in it, then it is a good thing. So we see that right away. Shlomo is explaining over there the importance of occupying yourself with Torah. Marsha explains the vote is a little bit different. That we're talking about the reward. Tachas Hashemesh, a person doesn't normally get reward in this world for his work, but he gets reward in Gan Eden, which was also created. It's also one of the things that were created Kodim Shenivra Olam. So then he has reward in that. He brings over here from Rashi on the Pasuk over there, who has yet another explanation that if a person works Tachas Hashemesh, Tachas in the sense of instead of, like Ayin Tachas Ayin, if a person sets aside Torah and works on other kinds of Omel, then he's not going to get anything useful out of it because Torah has to come first.
Full time or part time?
Well, I mean, if a person is able to full time, then he needs to do full time. If he can't, then that's what we had in Brachas, Rabbi Shmuel versus Rabbi Shimon about Malach to Nasaideh Chedim, or do most people not reach that level? But yeah, it's all whatever a person is capable, of course. The Alter Rebbe brings in a few places in Tanya, by the way, from the Zohar, that even within Divrei Torah themselves, you can have it can remain Tachas Hashemesh. If a person learns Torah Shaloi Lishma or Davins without proper Kavana, then also it remains Tachas Hashemesh, and it doesn't go up to the Olam HaSel Yonim where it's supposed to. You can restore it by learning again the same thing properly, by davening. His daven is even a scattered a little bit here, a little bit there throughout the year. Then it's Mila's Tfilas from the year, yeah, etc. Yeah. Okay, so that's the beginning of Kehelas has Divrei Torah. So that helps put things in perspective. Sofa Divra Tota. What do you have at the end of Kehelas the Divra Tota? Just div, the next to last pasuk says, Sof Dover Akol Mishma, at the end of the matter, when everything is heard, Eselikim Yirah, Fiu Hashem, Ves Mitzvois of Shmur, and keep his mitzvahs, Ki Zeh Kol Hadam, because this is the entire person. So again, once you have the beginning and the end, that we see that Shlomo is stressing the importance of Torah and mitzvahs, then you're going to realize that everything else in the middle of the book is working towards that conclusion. And then therefore, there's nothing to be bothered by the contradictions.
Even if we don't understand it.
Even if we don't understand it, right. Yeah. So therefore, so the Chachamim could leave it available to the public. And now they could expect that if a person from the Hamoinam is reading these psukim and doesn't understand something, then he'll be able to keep things in proper perspective by the beginning and the end and go and ask the Chachamim if necessary, rather than coming up with wrong ideas of what a yid is in the world for. Okay, so the Gemara asks, by the way, my kizek la adam. What does that last phrase, kizek la adam, mean? On the face of it, and on the simple meaning, it means, in other words, that this is the entire purpose that a person is in the world for. But the Gemara is looking for another meaning of it. It sounds like it says this, the person who fears Hashem and does the mitzvahs, is the whole man. So what does that mean? Amar Abu Lazar, kol ha'olam kula le'nivra ela b'shvil zeh. Means the entire world was created only for such a person. Rab Abba Bar Kahana almost shokol zek neged kol olam kuloi. Rab Abba Bar Kahana says it means this person is equal to the entire, is equal in importance to the entire world. Shimon ben Azayah, remember, Amin al Shimon ben Zoyma, remember, loy nivra olam kuloi elo letseves lazek. The whole world is created only to be a companionship for this person. So what are these three expressions? So we had this Gemara also in Brachas. Hakosev over there explains that you have like this. Rabbi Lazar is saying that once you have such a person in the world, everything else in the world, there's really no reason that anything else in the world should even need to exist compared to that you have such a person and you have other people who don't live up to that, then they b'chlal don't even really have a right to exist. The only reason is because practically speaking, in order for such a person to exist, you have to have a world that brought him into being. You have to have parents that brought him into the world. You have to have resources in the world that went into him, that went into his development and so forth. But basically, the whole world was created only for him. Nothing else really is of importance. Then Rab Abba Bar Kahana says, I mean, you can't really say that. You're going to say that the whole world has no right to exist except for him. So no, you're going to say everything else is labatola. So no, what you're going to say is that he's equal to the whole world. So yeah, everything else is necessary, but everybody else has their advantages also, but he is equal in weight and in importance to all of them. Then Ben Azay or Ben Zoma says a third thing. He says, after all, what are you going to say? Then you're going to say that everybody is equal in importance to such a person. Shouldn't such a person be far more important than the others? So therefore he says that it means that everything else is only as a companion for him, because again, you need people in the world, even after the person exists, you need people to help him out. You need people to be able to farm, for example, that he should have food to eat, to make clothes for him to wear, to do all kinds of things like that. So for that purpose, all those other people and all those other creations in the world exist in order to help him out, in order to make him be able to accomplish his avodah. The Rambam says in a similar vein, the Rambam describes you can have a king built a tremendous, beautiful palace and standing there even for hundreds of years. And what's the purpose? That one day a tzaddik should be passing by and it's a hot day and he sits for a while to rest in the shade of the palace. So that's one thing. Marsha there gives a different point, that the three expressions over here refer to the three levels of the world. You have the world of the Malachim, you have the world of the stars and planets and other heavenly bodies, and then you have the terrestrial world that we live in. So all three, so each one of the Chachamim over here is saying that each one of those things, the first one, the world, the whole world of the Malachim, was only created for such a person. Malachim don't have Bechira, the person does, he's exercising his Bechira properly, therefore the Malachim were created only for his sake. Then the world of the stars and planets and whatnot, so that's equal to him, those are equal in importance to him. So the tzaddikim, after all, are compared to stars. Moshe Rabbeinu's face was shown like the sun. Yeshua is like the moon. And then the third one about the kol olam nivra elo letseves lazeh is similar to what Akosev says. The whole terrestrial world, the whole earthly world that we live on, was created to be a companionship for such a person to be able to accomplish the jobs and whatever that are needed in order for him to live and do his avodah.
Okay.
How's that related to kol ha'odam?
So that's what we're saying. Kol ha'odam, the entire person is, according to any of these three explanations, ki zeh, this person who is yorei es Hashem, keeps mitzvahs, is kol ha'odam. He is the entire world. So that's a person is obligated to say, but really nivra olam. It's a similar idea. A person needs to live up to that he is yorei es Hashem, keeping mitzvahs, and then he has the right to say, but really nivra olam. No, but that's our character. We're saying that's the point, that the world is created in order to make it possible for such a person to be able to live and do as avod. There's a famous Hasidic Shavuot in it that says that a person should, I think it's from Abzusha Anapol, or I don't remember, that says that a person should have two pockets in his clothing. In one pocket he should have the line Bishvili Nivra Olam, and in the other pocket he should have the line Vanuchi Ofer Ve'if, to put things in perspective. So the Gemara says, "My dvar of soisrin zesya." Now, what are the contradictions in Sefer Kehelas that bothered the Chachamim, and they were thinking to hide it away? So, for example, "Ksiv toiv kas mischoik." One pasuk says, "Anger is better than laughter." "Uchtiv l'schoik amarti maholol." On the other hand, another pasuk says, "To laughter, I said it's praiseworthy." Now, Marsha points out, we had the contradiction before about the Shabeach and Yesa Mason versus the Caliph Chai Utov. The Chachamim weren't so bothered by that contradiction. Again, like Ion Yaakov says, the Chachamim are bothered by contradictions that seem to strike at basic things of Yiddishkeit. So here, on the one hand, we're saying that that anger is better than happiness. On the other hand, he's saying that happiness is praiseworthy. And also, Marsha points out, now on the face of it, in the context of the pasuk, the word maholol means confused. And in fact, that's how the Mefarshim on the pasuk explain it. Not maloshin halal, praiseworthy, but maloshin hololos, which means wildness. So Fakert, he's putting down schoik in both places. However, Marsha says that if it meant that, then could it have said, then it didn't have to say the word maholol at all. The whole pasuk goes, the schoik amarti maholol, or the simcha mazoi oisa, what is happiness accomplishing? If he meant that schoik is not a good thing, then he could have just said, the schoik of a simcha amarti mazoi oisa. The fact that he's using the word maholol allows us to possibly understand that he means that it's praiseworthy. So what is it? Is schoik praiseworthy or is it not? Psim, v'shibachti ani es simcha. Similarly, you have a pasuk that says, I praise simcha, I praise happiness. Uchtiv simcha mazer oisa. The end of this pasuk that we quoted, the schoik amarti maholol, the end of the pasuk was simcha mazer oisa. What is happiness accomplishing? So what is it? Is schoik a good thing? Is schoik, laughter, a good thing or a bad thing? Is simcha a good thing or a bad thing? So now the Chachamim work to reconcile it, loy kasha, so now we can say there's no contradiction. Toiv kas mischoik, when it says anger is better than laughter, that means toiv kas shakoyis HaKadosh Baruch Hu al tzedikim b'olam hazeh, the anger that Hashem displays towards the tzedikim in olam hazeh is better mischoik shemesachat HaKadosh Baruch Hu al rishoyim b'olam hazeh, is better than the laughter and the happiness that Hashem shows toward the smiling face that Hashem shows towards the Roshoyim in Olam Hazeh, because the Tzaddikim are going to suffer in Olam Hazeh and they'll get Olam Haba, whereas the Roshoyim the other way around, they're going to have a good time of it in Olam Hazeh, and then they have, and then they're tormented in Olam Haba. So that's the Tov Kas Mischot. In fact, Marsha says, now the end of the Pasuk, goes Kibiroya Ponim Yitav Lei. With a bad expression on the face, the heart will be good. So Marsha says that, according to what we're saying over here, that you'd have to use the Targum. If you look on Targum on Non-Kehelas, it explains that that last part, Kibiroya Ponim Yitav Lev, means that when Hashem shows anger towards the world, when Hashem shows an unfriendly face, Kavyochel, towards the world, that motivates the Tzaddikim to daven harder and to bring Hashem's Rachamim on the world, and therefore Yitav Lev, that causes a good heart in the world. So again, it goes with this idea that Tzaddikim have a hard time of it, and Hashem displays anger, but there comes out good. And ulaschoik amauti maholol. When on the other hand, when Shlomo says, "I said about schoik, about laughter, that it's praiseworthy," that means that schoik shemasachet b'kadosh baruch hu matzadikim b'adam haba. That means the laughter and the enjoyment that Hashem enjoys with the tzadikim in olam haba. That's the best kind of schoik. Next, what about v'shibachti ani es simcha? When Shlomo says, "I praise simcha," zus simcha shal mitzvah. That refers to a simcha in connection with doing a mitzvah. So therefore, he goes on to say that in the pasuk, what kind of simcha is not good for a person is only the kind of simcha that's tachas Hashemesh, like we said before, simcha of gashmiistic things. Ula simcha mazu oisa, what he says, what is simcha accomplishing? Zu simcha sheina shal mitzvah. That refers to a simcha that has nothing to do with a mitzvah, then that kind Shlomo is saying is not worth such a thing. Tov leib mishta tamid. So that means, in other words, what's the point? A tov leib mishta tamid is that'll motivate him more to do mitzvahs. So in other words, the simcha, it can be either way. It can be that the simcha is a result of the mitzvah, or it can be that the simcha precedes the mitzvah and makes it possible to do the mitzvah. So yeah, you have the stresses in Tanya, you have to be careful of atzvos, etc. But in other words, the point is that simcha, and it's not simcha for its own sake, it's simcha for the sake of somehow it's going to lead to mitzvahs. L'lamdecha, so this comes to teach you, when you see the importance of simcha shal mitzvah, the Shechina doesn't rest on a person out of a state of laziness, or of sadness, or of laughter, or lightheadedness, or from casual conversation, or empty talk. Sicha and dvarim b'teilim are much the same kind of thing. And in fact, other Gemaras that have this line don't have the word sicha, but the Rambam does talk about there are five or six different kinds of talk. He talks about you have talk which is a mitzvah, talk which is a reshus, talk which is not recommended, talk which is an outright aveira, etc. So simcha and dvarim b'teilim could be two different ones within those. Anyway, el mitzvah dvar simcha shal mitzvah. When does the Shechina rest on a person? From a state of simcha of a mitzvah. Shenema, as we find by Elisha, you have the story over there where the king of Yisrael and Yehuda and the minister in charge of Edom went to visit him. And at first, Elisha is angry. He says, "What are you, the king of Yisrael, doing over here? You're an Oved Avodah Zarah. You want help? You want help? Go to your fake Nevi'im. But then they talk him into, "Please help us. The Jewish people are in great danger." So he says, "Va'ata chuli v'goymer, now bring for me a singer." And when the singer played his instrument, then the Ruach Hashem came on Elisha and he said Nevuah to them. So we see that there you also needed simcha shal mitzvah. So in other words, the Marashah explains having the Shechina rest on him himself is a mitzvah. So that can be called simcha shal mitzvah. Ion Yaakov points out also that we had before in the Yerushalmi on Brachas that the harp that David HaMelech used to wake him up every night so he could learn Torah, that was the same harp that now 100 years later was available to Elisha, and he also used it to arouse himself to learn Torah, and now he used it to arouse his Koyach of Nevuah, so therefore there really is Simcha Shal Mitzvah involved. So therefore that's the Simcha that Shlomo HaMelech is talking about is a good thing. So the Gemara continues, the same way when it comes to a matter of halacha, you first have to begin with simcha. You have to begin, Rashi says, with milsa de b'dichas, with a joke, as the Gemara is going to say soon. The same way, as far as a good dream, if you want to have good dreams, then you should go to sleep in a state of simcha, and then you'll have positive dreams. So the Gemara asked Eini, "So is that so? You're telling me that halacha requires that you should be in a good mood and a mood of simcha first?" Well, Amar of Gidol Amar Rab, just the opposite. Kol Tamad Chacham should yoshev lifnei Rabbi. Any Tamad Chacham who sits in front of his Rebbe, the ein sif sois of notfus mar, and his lips are not dripping with bitterness. In other words, because he's so afraid, he has emer, he has such a pachad for his Rebbe. Tikav bena, those lips deserve to be burnt. Shenema, as the pasuk says, sifsos of shoshanim, his lips are like roses, or whatever kind of flower shoshanim are, and notfos moreover, dripping with overflowing myrrh. which is mor being one of the spices in the Ketores. So al tikri mor over ela mar over. First of all, don't read mor over, which means flowing mor, ela mar over, but flowing bitterness. So the lips have to be flowing bitterness, and so that's sifsoizav. And al tikri sheshanim ela sheshonim. And don't read sheshanim, meaning roses, but rather sheshonim, those who learn Torah. So in other words, so now putting the pasuk together with these altikris, sifsosef sheshonim, the lips of the one who was learning Torah have to be notfus mar over, they have to be overflow, have to be dripping and overflowing with bitterness. So you have to be in a state of merinus, not in a state of simcha. Marsha points out another possibility as well. The word sheshanim or sheshonim can also be with sin. So it can be sesonim, meloshon sason. So instead of sason, if a person has subsosim, sesonim, that his lips are happy in front of his rebbe, then that's no good. Moreover, he's removing the bitterness and the aima that he should have of his rebbe, and therefore he deserves to have his lips burnt. So anyway, so you see that you're not supposed to have simcha in a time like that. The answer is like Kasha, Haba Rabba, Haba Talmidim. There's no contradiction. One's talking about the Rebbe, one's talking about the Talmidim. The Rebbe, to be Mashpia, to the Talmidim, has to be in a state of Simcha. The Talmidim have to be in a state of Bittul. They have to have the Mar'ot. The Boisema, Haba, Haba Rabba, or we can answer that both of them are talking about the Rebbe. But like Kasha, Homi Kame de Liftach, Hodlavasa de Pasach, one is talking about before he starts teaching the Talmidim, and the other one is after he starts teaching the Talmidim. So beforehand, he should get himself and them in a good mood. And after that, though, they need to all be sitting be'emo v'yira with a merus. Kihoda Rabba mikame de pasach lo rabbanon. As we find that Rabba, before he would start his drosha to tamidim, omer milsa de b'dichaso, he would say a funny thing. Or badchi rabbanon, and the chachamim would laugh. L'soif yosef be'emso pasach mishmaita. Afterwards, he would sit with ema with fear of Hashem, and he would start teaching what he's going to teach. So we see that even with the Rebbe himself, there's a time and place for everything. In the Maimel, the Chododi, that we learn by a wedding, that we say by a wedding, you have the explanation over there that the idea is when he makes the joke first, then that he's lowering himself now, and he's creating a kesher between him and them, such that now afterwards he's able to be mashpia to them, and they're able to be makabel from him. Like when the Chum and the Chosin does the badekin for the Kala, etc. It could be a mistake, and it could be an aima that they're going to make a mistake in halacha. It can just be an aima. The fact you're learning the Eibishter's Torah, you're learning the Eibishter's Torah, and you should have an aima of a yira for that. That's you have the line that it said the Gemara says elsewhere that just like the Torah was given, the aima of a yira, the rest is of a zia, so it has to be in later times when you learn. By the way, as far as what the milsa de b'dichasa was, you know, everybody always thinks that it was, you know, like you told them jokes, but why, you know, is Rabbi going to be telling knock knock jokes or something? I always thought, and I haven't found a mocker for this, but I think you do have places in the Gemara, you know, where it says that a chacham said something and then machaku alav ma'arava, they laughed about it in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, or you have other similar expressions like that somebody said something in Torah and the other chachamim laughed at it. I think maybe that's the kind of thing that we're talking about that Rabbah would tell them. He would tell them statements, which to you or me, they wouldn't seem funny at all. But to the Chachamim who are steeped in learning, their whole life is learning, they would realize that this doesn't make sense. And therefore, to them, they would find it funny. Kenza. Okay. The Gemara continues. V'af sefer mishlei bikshul lignoz. Now that we talked about Kehelas, we said the Chachamim were thinking of hiding away Kehelas, and eventually they decided, if not necessary, they had the same problem with Mishlei, they wanted to hide it away. Show you Dvar of Sosun Zeseh. Because again, there are contradictions between one another part of Mishlei. And again, as Marashah says, they figured Mishlei is also a collection of Shlomo's Chochma, so therefore it's not on the level of Kisvei HaKodesh anyhow. So if there are contradictions in it, instead of working to resolve them, we should just hide it away. But, so why in the end did they not do that? So Amri, because they said, listen, Sefer Kehelas, Lav Einin and Vashkesin and Taima, with Sefer Kehelas, we looked into it and we're able to find how to reconcile the psukim that contradict each other. Hochanami la Einin. Here also, at least we should make the effort to look into it rather than just writing it off right away. So my dvar of Sosun Zeseh, so what kind of things did they find in Mishlei that contradict one another? Ksiv, you have one pasuk that says, Al Tan Ksil Ki Ivaltoi, don't answer a fool according to his foolishness. And then actually the very next pasuk says, "Anek silki valti, do answer the fool like his foolishness." And these are back-to-back psukim. So what's going on over here? And then they realize, like Kasha, "Hob divrei Torah, hob mili de'alma."
One's talking about in Divrei Torah, and the other is talking about in Mila D'Alma, in worldly matters. In fact, Maharsha says, with each one of them, you look at the end of the Pasuk and you realize what it's talking about. The first one, Altan Silki Valte, continues, Pen Tishva Loi Gam Ota, because you may end up being equal to him. So there we're talking about, in other words, with Mila D'Alma, don't bother answering him because then you're just lowering yourself to his level. So, as an example, the Gemara is going to bring over here, somebody says something ridiculous or something that's a lie. If you contradict them and says, no, you don't know what you're talking about, how is anybody who's watching supposed to know who's telling the truth? So therefore, don't bother answering him in the first place. As opposed to the second pasuk ends off, pen yir chocham be'enav, that he shouldn't be wise in his own eyes, that's referring to Divrei Torah. So if a ksil, if a fool says something, asks it, challenges you in Divrei Torah, then you should answer him according to his foolishness, because otherwise he's going to think that he has the better of the argument, and he knows what the Torah is talking about, and he knows that his ideas are right and so forth. So you don't want that, therefore you have to answer. So kiha, as we have the example, a person once comes in front of Rebbe, he says, you should know, your wife is actually my wife. In other words, he's accusing Rebbe of being mezana with his wife, and what you think are your sons are really my sons. So in other words, in effect, he's claiming that Rebbe Rebbe's sons are mamzer. So instead, now this is an example of Altan Silki Valte. What should Rebbe tell him? You don't know what you're talking about. Again, how is anybody going to know who's telling the truth over here? So rather, Omale, so Rebbe pretends as though, you know, thank you for letting me know. Omale Ritzon Chashatishta Kosho Yayin, do you want to drink a cup of wine? Like, in other words, you're right, I owe you one for informing me of this fact. Shasa Upoka, he drank the cup of wine and exploded. It was the Eibishter caused it, that way this guy won't harass Rebbe anymore. Yon Yaakov points out that you have the famous line, kol ha-posel b'mumay posel. When a person accuses somebody else of a flaw, it often means that he himself has the same kind of flaw. So if this guy is claiming that Rebbe's children are mamzerim, very likely he himself is a mamzer. Now, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos that a mamzer who's not known to the, if a person is a mamzer and it's not known to the public, Hashem arranges that he dies young so that more mamzerim don't proliferate in the world. If they know he's a mamzer, there's no problem. People will know to not marry with him. But so like this guy being a mamzer, then Taki, he died on the spot. And another example, Ahuda also kamedir abchia, omale imcha ishti va'atabi, he says, your mother is my wife and you're my son. So another, again, he's claiming that abchia himself omale ritzon chashitishta kosho yayin. Again, abchia asks him, do you want to drink a cup of wine? Shoso upoka, again, he ate it, he drank it and he exploded. Omer abchia ahanya leitzoy sila rebi, dole leshabi b'nei mamzeva. Rebi's tefillah helped that his children wouldn't be considered mamzer. The Rebbe kava matz the Omer, because when Rebbe would daven Shemana Esrei, he would finish off with a tefillah, Yehi rotzen v'fanecha Hashem elokeinu shetatzveni hayom me'azei ponim me'azus ponim, that you should save me today from chutzpah dikah people, chutzpah nyachs like this, or me'azus ponim, and from chutzpah, meaning to not answer such a person with chutzpah. So now that tefillah helped Rebbe that Taka Hashem remove that person who was harassing him. The girsa that we have in front of us is that one story happened with Rebbe, the other happened with Abchia. The original girsa of Ein Yaakov is actually that both stories happened with Rebbe. So Maharsha says, if we say that the second one was Abchia, then fine. We say, you have the Gemara that says, B'do the Masachia, that Abchia's deeds in a way were greater than those of Rebbe. So if Rebbe had the schus to be saved from such things, then all the more so Abchia has such a schus. Yom Yom Mashiach Go'ola, Yotes Adar Beis, or Yotes Adar Bain. The Gemara talks about what's the name of Mashiach, and you have several different opinions in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. And the Rabbanan say, Chivra de Beis Rebbe Shmoy, he is the Metzora of the household of Rebbe. As a pasuk says in Yeshaya, that Mashiach has borne our sicknesses. In other words, the sicknesses that we would have deserved to have, he took them on himself instead, and his pain and our pains, he's bearing them. We thought that he's wounded and then he, we thought that he's wounded and then bothered by Hashem.
So therefore, so Metzoda is the name of Mashiach in the time of Golus. Mashiach himself is on the ultimate level of Shlemus. As it says a few psukim earlier, Yaskil Abi, he'll be my servant, will be very wise, Yoram Menisa of Govam Oida, will be very high and great and exalted, but he himself feels on himself the pains and the troubles of Golus. Halacha, we're starting Simon Nun Zayin, which is the dinim of if you made a bracha on food and then they brought you more of the same thing. So now, suppose a person made a bracha on bread and he didn't plan to eat any more than what was there in front of him. Let's say, for example, a person buys one roll and he's only planning to eat that. He thought that was enough. Later on, he realizes it's not enough, so he goes to buy more. Then, even if he has some of the original leftover, he's going to need to make a second hamotzi because that's called nimloch. He changed his mind. On the other hand, for example, if it's at home, you cut a slice of bread and you figure that one slice is enough and then you want more, then you don't have to make another bracha because that's normal. That's different when you're buying in a store versus when you have it in your house.